Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for coming to this presentation on White Institution Black Archive. It is a discussion around the archive that Dr. Jeffrey Sterling and I created at Northwestern University in 2017. Can you hear me okay? Great. So my name is Lauren Lowry. I am the chief archivist of the Modern Dance Music Research and Archiving Foundation in Chicago. We preserve and document the history of house and dance music in Chicago. House music is a form of music birthed in Chicago. EDM is commonly the name these days, but it started in Chicago, and I am very, very happy to be the person or the foundation that is preserving that music. It's a really fantastic music form. If you haven't heard of it, listen to house music, Google it. I am also here today because I co-founded with Dr. Jeffrey Sterling, he was a practicing physician, and the former president, the immediate past president of Northwestern's Black Alumni Association. We co-founded the NUBA Archives. And the NUBA Archives is the Northwestern University Black Alumni Association Archives. It's a collection that was, Northwestern hired an archivist specifically to document the black experience at Northwestern, given our inquiry concerning what Northwestern had currently documented about black life at Northwestern. And what I'm going to do, and what we're going to do with it today, is share with you a little bit about why we decided to do this, what was happening at Northwestern to make this particular type of project critical, and how we got it done, what happened, and the implications today. There's a lot of things going on that I'll talk about in the United States today that suggests that this type of archive, this type of repository within a repository is critical at every institution. And so we'll talk a little bit about that. So in 2012, I became the vice president of Northwestern's Black Alumni Association. In 2012, I was one of those alums. I'm an archivist, but I was one of those alums who really didn't spend much time at Northwestern other than football games. Love football, love Big Ten football at every single football game, but didn't know what was really happening with students, black students particularly, things that were going on. The president at the time was a young lady named attorney Tanya Woods. Her daughter was at Northwestern, and she asked me to be her vice president. I said, sure, as long as I don't have to do anything, I'm happy to do it. And so I didn't think I was going to have much to do. This is one of our first marketing pieces to our alums, asking them, telling them about the archive, and sharing with them sort of our thoughts, why we, you know, what we want to do, what the archive was. You know, of course, you have to help some people understand exactly what an archive is and why it's important. So this is one of our first marketing pieces, actually the first marketing piece that we had. And so I just wanted to show it. It just shows, you know, sort of the pillars of Northwestern. That's the outside of the Black House. That's the arch that enters Northwestern on Sheridan Road in Evanston. And then black students in the 70s at the Black House with one of our famous black mural in the Black House that's since been tainted, erased, painted over. Interesting story about that that mural. So some of the questions we wanted to sort of tackle today that hopefully we'll answer for you in some ways are these questions. Is the black history of a predominantly white institution valuable? That question became very clear to me in 2012. Like, you know, maybe our history is not important. Maybe we don't have history at Northwestern. Maybe we don't. Maybe my presence there in the 80s. Oh, did I just date myself?
Reincarnated.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe I wasn't there. And sometimes if I look at the Daily Northwestern, at the archives of the Daily or some of these other things, I don't see myself. So I was wondering that. Also, hopefully we'll answer this. What happens to the public record and to future research when these stories and artifacts are not preserved and respected at the highest level? And what are the implications in future for this archive? And how might it impact institutions and the archive profession globally? So hopefully we'll answer some of those questions for you today. We're also going to sort of discuss who belongs. Who belongs in the archive at an institution like Northwestern or any predominantly white institution? This archive, and Jeff will discuss more about what we overcome. What do we have to overcome to create this archive? How did we succeed? How do we continue to succeed in the formation of this archive and its ongoing work? And then planning for the future. What do we see happening for the future of this archive? Is it going to be important after the 3-year stint that our new archivist was given? Does it continue to live at Northwestern? So we thought, given what's happening today, and I'd like to start with, you know, we're talking about the past and archives, but why is this critical? And it's certainly critical when you look at things that are happening in the United States today. Who belongs at an institution? Whose story is valuable? Just you being there, is it valuable at all? Right now, in 2018, we've had 2, maybe 5 incidents, but I'm going to highlight these. There's a young lady at Smith College just recently in the last couple of weeks was eating on her campus, and the police were called on her. She's eating while black, is what we normally say. So she's eating while black, and somehow someone says she doesn't belong there. Please produce an ID. Please produce something that suggests you belong at this university on this campus. And then at Yale University, I'm sure some people have heard about this. Not too long ago, maybe May or June, a black student fell asleep in her dorm in the common spaces, and the police show up. And, again, ask her for her ID. Ask her, does she belong there? What's going on at these universities that someone of color, while doing regular things at that university, she's paying money to be there, is being questioned about her belonging there, her presence there? That's disheartening. And it's disheartening for a lot of different reasons. How does this archive help that? What happens, you know, with that? So in 2012, I'm going back now. In 2012, I arrive at Northwestern. I know this is hard to read. But unfortunately, the minute I jump on the board at Northwestern University's Black Alumni Association, a young lady is just walking around campus, and she sees some kids having a party in blackface, doing some derogatory things, etc. And it was alarming to her, and so she wrote about it. So she wrote about it actually not in our main newspaper, but at a publication called North by Northwestern that really has unique stories, underground stories about what's happening at Northwestern. This young lady was clearly upset about what was happening at Northwestern, and of course, almost immediately, there's backlash against her. I didn't put a slide on this, but unfortunately, the faculty had to write a letter to the Daily Northwestern and to Northwestern administration backing her up on sharing this story, supporting her in that endeavor. And then, of course, it gets to the Northwestern Black Alumni Association. Here I come on this board, and I'm, you know, again, perfectly happy to do absolutely nothing. And then something like this comes, and, of course, the Black Alumni Association really needs to be very present and really try to make sure that something like this doesn't happen again and people need to be punished. So I'm on the board, and I say, you know, what can I do? And I ask all of my friends about best practices. What's happening? What can we do at research-level institutions like Northwestern to help black students feel more involved, feel more fit in better? How can we teach the administration to be more sensitive to black issues and concerns? And so, of course, I said, you know what? People at Northwestern have probably been discriminated against since 1899. I'm going to go to the archive as an archivist and see if they've compiled some of these stories. And, of course, so I go to Kevin Leonard, who is our chief historian and an archivist at Northwestern. I said, what do you have on black students, black people at Northwestern? Show me what you have. And basically, I think almost every sort of black archivist has a story like this. He gives me a folder about as big as this, and he says, this is what we have on black people at Northwestern. Just a small folder. And he says, two black people a year come here looking for information about black people or black events. So we just really have not put that together. So we don't have a repository of what's going on with black people or what has happened with black people. He also says, you know, the black people that he approached had no interest in giving back to Northwestern because they had such a terrible time. So I was like, wow, I had the best time ever at Northwestern when I was there just a little while ago. So I was like, I had the best time ever. What are you talking about? Like, people had a terrible time. What happened? We need to know what happened. So unfortunately, this is the incident that allowed me to become more involved in the Black Alumni Association, our overall organization, the Northwestern's Alumni Association, and then have more interaction with students, etc. So in 2013, I said, Kevin, I want to talk to you a little bit about creating an archive that documents the history of black people at Northwestern. What was happening with them, who they were, what they've done, what's going on. How can we expand that little envelope that you've given me with, you know, some of the oldest black people and some of the athletes and the actors. There's so many. I know there's some rich histories there. How can we really do this? So I put together a phenomenal team to meet with Kevin Leonard. I love Kevin, by the way, so we all know Kevin. He's a great guy, but this was interesting. So I put together this team. So the team there is Charles Whitaker. He's now the current dean of Medill. That's Northwestern School of Journalism. Mayan Bassey. Mayan Bassey is a filmmaker, the person just to his right. So I'm from the left is Charles Whitaker, the tall black guy. Next to him is Mayan Bassey. Mayan Bassey is a filmmaker who actually did the documentary on blacks at Stanford University from its beginning to 1960. So we have a filmmaker who's already documented the history of Stanford University, who happens to be a Northwestern alum. That's me. That's Kevin Leonard. That's a gentleman named Kevin Roberts. Kevin Roberts used to own a huge bookstore in Chicago. So he was, you know, clearly a very learned, very sharp Northwestern alum. And then to the right is attorney Tanya Woods, who was at the time the Black Alumni Association president. So we had a great meeting with Kevin. We said, Kevin, we are going to create this archive. We would like to house it at Northwestern. We'd like to house it maybe at the Black House at Northwestern. We've got all these great ideas. We want to do it. Within a couple of months, Kevin says, you know, we don't think we have the repository space. We don't think black people will donate to this archive. And overall, we're not sure if it's the best idea, which was alarming. We were completely caught off guard by it. We thought this was the best idea ever. You know, like, we're going to create this archive. We'd like to house it at Northwestern. So we said, okay, so what's the next step? Because we're going to get these oral archives from our oldest living alums, and we're going to get the physical archives of our more prominent alums, just because it should happen. We're going to do that. We want to be able to share with our undergraduates exactly what happened to some of those people who came before you. People have been discriminated against in the past, and they've moved forward, and they've been extremely successful. But you need to know those stories, maybe firsthand or maybe secondhand. We're just going to make sure that archive continues, and we're going to make it happen. So we talked to a gentleman named Dino Robinson. Dino Robinson is the founder of the Shorefront Legacy Center. Shorefront Legacy Center is based in Evanston, Illinois. It's an award-winning archive. This archive has gotten awards from the Society of American Archivists, the Illinois Association of Museums, and I could go on and on. He documents the history of blacks along the North Shore of Chicago. So from Evanston up to Glencoe, some of these generally predominantly white suburbs, he's documented the history of blacks and their contributions to those communities. It's a phenomenal archive. A lot of people know him. He's part of the BMRC at University of Chicago. Just a really phenomenal guy. So I go to him and I say, how do we create this archive? How are we going to make this archive happen? And I was surprised how receptive he was. Dino's a busy guy. He works at Northwestern. He also has his own archive that he's speaking all over the country with. He's doing different things. He says, let me help you. I put together a small proposal for Kevin. He shored it up and said, you know what? If they can't house this at the Black House, then we can house it here at Shorefront. We can do it right at Shorefront Legacy Center. I'm happy to carve out some space for you here. We will, you know, preserve and protect your documents. And it's in line with his organization's missions to a certain degree because, you know, blacks at Northwestern are blacks along the North Shore of Chicago. So it worked out well. Unfortunately, Dino's daughter is going to college, and the college week started this week. So he is in Colorado. But we have some audio of him telling us why it was important for him to contribute and help. And when I say help, he step by step helped us figure out how we make this happen and how we do it either with or without Northwestern University.
About helping me put together the language to ask Northwestern to participate in creating the about
just trying to skip
helping
some of
me
that.
Put together the language to ask Northwestern to participate in creating the presentation and the proposal for Northwestern to create the NUBA archives. What do you remember doing? Do you remember kind of all the things you did to assist me?
So what I recall NUBA asking, as advice to Shorefront, what you're trying to do, I was really concerned about control. And I thought it was very important for NUBA to control its collection, its archive, its way of collecting these archives, its way of establishing the relationships you have with not only your membership base, but also on campus undergraduates and graduates. I think that was the biggest part of the process that you're working toward, because I feared that Northwestern kind of swoop down and say, this is a great idea, we'll take it all over. And you can sit back in the shadows and just watch us.
So that's still something that, you know, continues, could be a threat, even though we have some language suggesting, you know, sort of the partnership between the library and NUBA. You know, large organizations and institutions like Northwestern, you know, always attempt to supersede or expand their powers into a place, certainly places that are have been generally forgotten in the past. Mm-hmm. They tend to attempt to swoop in and get some other things done. But Dino, you were even more, I think, instrumental in making the entire proposal happen. What made you decide to really take the time? I know you're a busy guy. Mm-hmm. What made you decide to take the time to really help with language across the board? I think I had put together sort of a small proposal, and you shored it up with some, you know, sort of good language, et cetera. You know, why assist? Why help?
I think it's our love for what we contribute to the general population, and in the realm of archiving, its place in the historical narrative. What I really found very intriguing about the NUBA archives is just the vast amount of resources of former graduates and current students at Northwestern that had done tremendous things. But when you look at generally like the entire history of Northwestern campus, there are, you know, particular publications that have been released through Northwestern, and with volumes of pages of all the things that happen when it comes to the Black community on this campus and outside of this campus is relegated to just a few pages. And the amount of information that's there is sparse at most. It doesn't really show the true depth of what, you know, the Black experience was on campus. So with NUBA's approach to create an archive at a place in the Black House on campus to help establish that to become a destination place, a place of solace and solitude and solidarity that Northwestern's general population has been unable to provide. You have this big entity that's been established in the 1960s, late 1960s with the Black House, and now you have an archive that's able to capture these experiences and maintain that in a real way that's tangible to incoming students and returning graduates to see and appreciate their own history and their place and time. So with the NUBA proposal to Northwestern to designate where they wanted the archives to be, the reason why it needed to be there, and the process of how you were going to do that, I thought it was extremely important. And I think it really, you know, paralleled with what Shorefront was doing as well, where we wanted to have an archive that is dedicated to a particular demographic that the surrounding historical organizations were not capturing. And the stuff that they were capturing many times was taken out of context, too generalized, or just misplaced in topical descriptions. I don't want to have happen, you know, a group of students on Northwestern's campus and the only caption that's there is a group of Black students. Whether it could have been, these are the founders of XYZ organization that did these wonderful things. That's what tends to happen.
That's very true, very true. So, you know, I think the I had the idea probably in 2012, 2013, met with Kevin Leonard, in which he suggested that the library may not have the resources, we may not be able to do this, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, certainly we were determined to make it happen and, you know, came to you again and suggested, you know, if Northwestern won't house this or won't allow it to be housed mm-hmm. at the Black House or somewhere in the archive, we will move this forward and ask Shorefront Legacy Center to be our main repository. And so you agreed to that. So
yeah, hands down. I agreed to. Well, so it was funny because when you did present the proposal to Northwestern, and the first thing out of their mouths were, "We can't do this. We don't have the money to." It always, you know, rings to us as, we don't want to do it because we can't control it yet and we haven't found a way to monetize it yet. We jumped onto it immediately, not as an opportunity for Shorefront, but as an opportunity for building a relationship with a demographic that Shorefront has been working to tap in with. It also falls within our mission that we also want to help, you know, organizations who are doing similar things to grow and prosper in their collective and archiving endeavors. It wasn't our intent to say we have the NUBA archives and always have a permanent home in Shorefront, which would be great. But it would also be great that this Shorefront was a jumping point for a NUBA archive that eventually ended up in the Black House on campus that's under NUBA's control. That would be a better accomplishment in our view, in Shorefront's view, to see that happen. So our jumping into that type of agreement and possibilities, I saw this as a way of broadening collaborations, equitable collaborations, and opportunities that with the power of multiple entities working together toward a common goal, more resources would be available for us all.
So sorry that took so long. I thought I was going to be able to reduce it. But you can see that Dina was instrumental in keeping us motivated to make this happen, giving us the resources to assist in that. So in 2014, I'm off the board of Northwestern's Black Alumni Association, and the incoming president is Dr. Jeffrey Sterling. And so Dr. Jeffrey Sterling comes into a situation where there's a lot going on at Northwestern. So Dr. Sterling will tell us now how he became involved and how this archive became a possibility.
Good afternoon, everybody. I am not an archivist. At best, Lauren might grant me some type of honorary archivist status, but I'm actually a physician by training. My career actually began here in D.C., but that's a different conversation. And what I do now, I retired about 5 years ago, and now I run a consulting company and an implementation firm. And that's particularly relevant to the conversation because when I came in as president in 2014, I actually was vice president for a year in 2013, the archives was particularly intriguing to me for some very specific reasons. As a matter of fact, everything about Northwestern is intriguing. I love the place very much. It is very much a part of who I am, and we all are proudly purple. And one of the unique things about that particular place, no, this is not an advertisement for Northwestern, but I'm actually saying that all of us that come through that place have a sense of not just belonging, but ownership. And in the guise of making it a better institution, I'm going to tell you a little bit of a parallel story from what Lauren suggested. So I'm going to go back to one particular slide. And Lauren talked about this slide in the context of the archive. I'd like for you to look at these bullet points and recast those same considerations in the context of African-American students themselves. Now, the first black student actually showed up in Northwestern in about 1878. So when she says, you know, that this was the demonstration of the history of the black experience at Northwestern and over approximately 140 years or so ago, it wasn't necessarily a good thing. One of the reasons why Lauren, she forgot to mention that she actually drafted me to become president of NUBA for a very specific reason. There was a certain poignancy that existed about the year 2018. It was the 50th year anniversary of the seminal event at the university, the takeover of the university's bursar's office that led to dramatic and sustained improvements in the university and in particular the black experience. So coming upon the 50th anniversary commemoration of that takeover, we had several tools and motivations to deploy to incentivize the university to turn the thousands of African Americans and other blacks that would descend upon Northwestern in 28 into a celebration instead of something else. However, I actually came to the table, again, I'm an implementationalist, and one of the things that I often point out is that a good idea at a bad time is a bad idea. Think about that. And a bad approach to a good idea makes it a bad idea. So here we are, knowing that on the merits of the conversation, this had been presented to the university to do the right thing. And that kind of met with a thud. Well, as luck would have it, these days, universities across the country are interested in what happens across the country and at their universities. And a different way of incentivizing them beyond just the moral standard is really to have an appreciation and to impart an appreciation in institutions of higher learning that your success as an institution and our success as a country largely is intertwined in the development of individuals from the changing demographic in this country who maintain a certain level of competence. So again, I don't want you to do me any favors. I want you to prepare me for the world. And it's in the university's interest, it's in the country's interest, that everyone that is a graduate of these institutions of higher learning are able to take our country to different levels of success. So in other words, we needed to do this simply to make this great university greater. And those were the types of conversations that we began to have, not just to do it for the merits, but because not only did we belong, but we had overcome so much. And as we succeeded, the university succeeded. Now, the cherry on top of the ice cream in this conversation is that as opposed to the appeal to our better angels in wanting to get this done, she kind of hinted that the conversation had started to change toward, oh, we're going to do this. with or without the university's permission or cooperation, because we have a story to tell that's a hell of a lot bigger than a one-inch binder. So we began the conversation, and we recast the conversation not only in a self-determined manner, but we recasted our self-determination to impose our will on the university and to convince the university that this actually was in the university's best interest. And one thing that I really love about the university is that they don't always get it right, but you're able to have a conversation, and if you're able to appeal to their higher intellect and do it in an academic way, you can actually move the element, so to speak. And we were able to do that. And the conversations we had with Northwestern very much were, we can take a position among PWIs across the country and show leadership and demonstrate how this litany of phenomenally successful alumni of color that have come through the university were made so. That is a story to tell. That is a story worth telling. It's a story that reflects very well on the university. And by the way, the return on investment on these types of things with the types of grant monies that are available is actually pretty phenomenal. However, as we move forward, we also continue to impose the consideration that we very much were going to be in control of a conversation, and we wanted the archive to be something that we directed, that we maintained control of, that we told the story and the way in which we felt it needed to be communicated. We never called it this, but basically going into the four-year period between 2014 and 2018, we saw that there were three different parts of the archive story that needed to be told. In and of itself, the development of the archive was obviously meant to collect, assemble, organize, and, you know, collect, you know, really to tell these stories. We did that. But as we got into the different parts of what the story was we wanted to tell, we came up with some other ideas. Remember that I told you that 2018 was the 50th anniversary commemoration of that bursar's office takeover. Well, without asking, we decided to produce a movie. And we did. Let me see if we have that here. I'm going to... Really? Well, I'm going to show them this now. This is pretty cool. Imagine this, if you will. This is a trailer.
We must not approach the observance and enforcement of this law in a vengeful spirit. Its purpose is not to punish. Its purpose is not to divide, but to end divisions. Divisions which have lasted all too long.
May 3rd, 1968. James Turner took a seat on the steps of the Northwestern University bursar office, and he wouldn't leave.
I don't believe that there can be an honest person in this room and on this university that cannot himself say that there is wide, rampant social separation between the races on this campus.
2 days later, he and a group of students would change the school forever.
Kind of thrown into it. You didn't have a choice.
All I remember was bring Vaseline because it might have mace.
We didn't just go in there to protest. We had a list of demands.
We could challenge the system and go after what we thought we deserved.
This is the untold story of
I'm a black man in a white world. I'm a black man in a white world. I'm a black man in a white world.
Imagine, if you will, everybody knew about that story, but that story hadn't been told. We decided to tell it. And just as the Big Bang Theory isn't the entirety of the story of planet Earth, the takeover of the bursar's office was not the entirety of our story and our history at Northwestern. That's why the archive was so important. We wanted to collect our stories, tell our stories our own way. I actually served as executive producer for that film, and the film was premiered about a month ago. Actually, it was premiered on May 4th as part of the commemoration activities, and it'll be coming out hopefully we're negotiating with PBS and Netflix and other such channels to show that story. That's the power of what we can do when we have an archive and entities associated with the archive to tell our stories. Similarly, Lauren and I teamed up a second time and wrote a book. See this thing? I love this number, 562 pages. And by the way, the film is called The Takeover, The Revolution of the Black Experience at Northwestern. This book is titled Voices and Visions, The Evolution of the Black Experience at Northwestern University. So what we did here is we took, well, we went through the history going all the way back to 1878, and it's partially a history book, but then we began to collect stories. So we imparted oral traditions and making up a lot of the book. So there are actually 52 first-person accounts that tell stories, and these are incredibly prominent individuals or individuals who were prime movers in moving the ball forward. And through those stories, you actually can see the progression of the black experience at Northwestern, and you can see the progression of the university itself. There had never been anything like that accomplished at the university, and through the NUBA archives, again, Lauren and I teaming up as the founding implementers of the archive, we're very happy to do that as well. So we kind of had a three-pronged approach. We wanted to go over all of the history. We wanted to capture the history and to control it retroactively and proactively, and we wanted to tell the story of that seminal event. And that's what we've been able to do. And this actually has all occurred just inside of 1 year. And so we're very excited now that we were able to, once we demonstrated that there was a groundswell of support, all of the alumni that she was talking about before that weren't excited about donating things back to the university, well, they were worried about stuff ending up like that last scene in the first Indiana Jones movie, right? I'm glad people laughed. That means that you're just as dated as I am. Where it gets shoved into some warehouse somewhere. And if you actually go into the university's archives, it is just gorgeous, just tunnels and tunnels of great stuff. And if you go into any individual record, the stories are just phenomenal. But the point of the NUBA archives was always to enhance the university and to enhance the student experience. So we just don't want to collect the information. We want to disseminate it, and we want to, it's not a word, but programatize it. Because the students there still struggle. And what the students need to see is what a fully formed alumni of Northwestern University looks like. So we need to tell those stories of how you get from a struggling first-year student to a successful titan of industry or some other such thing. And you then cast what happens to you at the university as the price you pay to get there instead of you just being put upon for no apparent reason. There's a certain power in us being able to tell that story. And when we presented this to our alumni base, they came out in gangbusters. The difference perhaps from before to now is the fact that you had a strong black alumni association that was truly partnering with the university instead of being subservient to the university or appealing to the university's better angels, better instincts, and that we were able to say, oh, yes, we will have a role in collecting and in reviewing and defining the parameters in which your information will be displayed. Our alumni base has really rallied around that consideration, and there's certainly a lesson to be gained there. We're not, at no point in time was this ever meant to be adversarial or confrontational with the university. However, it's our history, and we were insistent on telling that history. Many of you, all of you, I'm sure, I know of Janetta Cole, who's a double wildcat. She has 2 degrees from there. And in her caption on the back of the book, I actually know this by heart, but I love holding up the book to read it. This highly important book shares the experiences of African-American students, faculty, staff, administrators, and alumni who studied, worked, and struggled and triumphed at Northwestern University. The compelling stories of African-Americans who are currently at the university are also told in this volume. Learning from these voices can lead to a far fuller understanding of black experiences at Northwestern. For as the Igbo people of Nigeria say, until lions have their own historians, tales of the hunt will always glorify the hunter. So that is what we've done. And, you know, there was a seminal event that actually occurred at the university. There's always something that goes on. But the gains that had been won during the 1968 takeover were such that people had begun to claim that there was no longer a need for these things. There's parallels in this all over the world, right? Is the Voting Rights Act still necessary, et cetera, et cetera? Does the changing demographic or does the changing composition of students away from first-generation students from inner city Chicago and other municipalities around the country to individuals that come from integrated neighborhoods in suburbia, for example. When they came to the university, they didn't have the type of experience that those individuals back in the 60s did. So they were questioning the relevance of the Black House, which had been the Department of African American Student Affairs, but even that designation had been stripped. And we found ourselves in a situation where brick by brick, the infrastructure and of the agreement that was made between the university and those students back in 1968 was being stripped away by individuals who seemingly had good intentions or good hearts. So in 2015, the university decided to do a full frontal assault on the Black House and to come up with a reorganization plan that would have turned the Black House into a multicultural space. Long story short, about 2,500 alumni decided that wasn't going to be the case, and the plans changed. And that really was an event that accelerated a revisiting of what was necessary to provide a culturally sensitive environment for African Americans at the university. And up front and center in that conversation was the archive, because so many of the administrators that we talked to, pretty universally, every single one of them said, I don't know the history. The history had never been recorded. And what they knew about the history, they thought was cast in some irrelevant terms because things had to have been different 20 years ago as opposed to what millennials were now experiencing. And the beauty of this book, even more so than the film, is that you can read this book and you can read the first-person accounts from individuals in 1968, and they use the exact same words as individuals whose stories are told in here from 2015. Of course, things are different. People were different. But the struggle continues in ways that are very meaningful and informative. So imposing this set of knowledge on the university, we hope and believe, will actually make for a better university experience and more compassion from the professionals that are responsible for moving this thing forward. So the logistics of it were pretty straightforward at that point in time because, as I mentioned, we had about 2,500 angry alumni, and we were approximately 2 years away from the 50th anniversary commemoration of the Bursar's office takeover. And in the spirit of really moving things forward, yes, we had leverage, but I really, in my heart, don't believe that the effort was made to threaten or they felt threatened. We simply wanted to make the university better. And so we doubled back to the notion that let's just do the right thing for the right reasons and allow us to show you the right way. And to the university's credit, they really did take a back seat and allow us to do all of the things that we've mentioned. And in partnership, this has provided tremendous dividends to the university. So it really does come back to the students, because we want the student experience at our university just to be as good as it possibly can be. It is a great university. And this is, you know, I'm talking in parallel now. This story should be the same for PWIs everywhere. There aren't PWIs out there that, for the most part, are trying not to generate a phenomenal student experience. The question is, why hasn't it occurred? And the unique thing about Northwestern University, I would suggest, is that they actually were willing to examine their legacy and willing to cede some of the control while accepting responsibility for not being able to get it done right. There is a thing. Cultural sensitivity actually matters. So when you're talking Black archives in predominantly white institutions, you know, the word that everybody hates to hear is, you know, don't be paternalistic. Don't tell us what you think we need. Partner with us. We are proudly purple as much as anyone else. We want to do something that glorifies and advances the university, because this really is about advancing the future for all Wildcats. And as long as there's going to be a Northwestern, there's going to be some Black in it. And we are not ever in this conversation doing anything other than honoring our unique experiences, even as we strive to embrace and to embody the best of the global university culture. So the university did hire an archivist for the Black Experience who deals with the internal workings of maintaining the archive and dealing with the programmatic request of the Black Alumni Association. Every presidential term of 2 years, I serve 2 terms, we will sit down with them and let them know in what direction we want the archives to focus. And she is doing this on a full-time basis, and with the influx of information, particularly after the commemoration that just occurred, we have much information that represents several treasure troves for the university to really explore this part of its history in a way that hadn't been done previously. We were very pleased and honored to have a launch event. The gentleman on the left there, for those of you that may not be aware of him, is Jonathan Holloway. He actually is the provost of Northwestern University. He was hired in 2017. Coincidence or not, it was a beautiful thing that it happened in time for the 2018 commemoration that we have our first provost who's an African-American there. And as you probably know, that's Jeanetta Cole, and our launch event actually discussed all things archives, all things Black history, and the launch of it all at Northwestern University. Also there on the right is a photo exhibit. These are the types of things that are popping up now around campus. We still are in the midst of the one-year celebration of the 50th anniversary commemoration. So from honoring past leaders of the student organization to prominent alumni, student, faculty, and staff members, all of that is now occurring and will be part of our offerings because, as I mentioned early on, the goal of the archives really was to establish programming around the Black experience in a way that really illuminates the best of what the university has to offer and what the university has produced. As Lauren said, and as you may have heard Dino speak to, trust but verify. And being in D.C., I'm a little cautious about throwing out old Russian proverbs, but it's kind of applicable in the setting. But we actually made sure that the language that was in the agreement between NUBA and the university was such that NUBA would always retain control, partnership, and the ability to set the programmatic agenda for how the contents of the archives was going to be displayed. That really became necessary because the single most frequent question that we would hear from our alumni who were thinking about giving was, how do I know this isn't just going to be packed away somewhere? And it's because we are active, we do the recruiting, we bring most. Lauren continues in this capacity, bringing most of the alumni to the table, and we sit around the table with the university and talk about the gifts, what can be done with the gifts, and in accordance with what the president of the organization sets as priorities, we determine what will happen. So here's the visual collateral of what we've produced already. Again, you heard the trailer for the takeover, and we do have a few copies of Voices and Visions is available everywhere. We have a couple of copies here. It's on Amazon. It will be at Barnes & Noble's. iTunes, it's on Kindle, et cetera. We think it's just a phenomenal retelling, and the fact that we were able to tell our own stories is meaningful, and I think that the university itself has learned a pretty powerful lesson. You know, we tend to fear the unknown and mock what we don't understand, but in this example, you know, they saw the film, they thought we were going to do a hatchet job on the university, and it's actually quite the contrary. What we have done is that we have reclaimed our rightful place inside the university where none existed before. And this has powerful implications for what the university will be able to accomplish moving into the future. But as I point out, they get that. Lauren actually pointed out to one of the individuals that was at the very first meeting who's now dean of the School of Journalism. I pointed out the chief academic officer, the provost of the university, is an African-American male. So the university is moving along, but I guess one of the morals of the story is that avoid that paternalism and actually move toward partnership, and these things really can happen. And that's the lesson that we have learned at Northwestern. I'd like to stop there, and Lauren and I would be happy to field any questions that you have. An archivist.
Can you talk about how that happened, where the impetus of that came from, and how they found the money?
I'll take the second question last. There's always money. It's just a question of realigning priorities and making a determination if this is a worthwhile project. Don't let any of these... Northwestern has a $10 billion endowment, okay? They have the money. So the process was pretty straightforward, and we don't care about the means as much as we do the end result. You know, Lauren actually is still the individual that is responsible for much of what's going to happen with the archive. So the university really needed someone who could deal with the logistics. See, Lauren is not an employee of the university. So there's give and take. There's compromise that needs to occur. Someone needs to work internally inside the university to hire and adhere to policies and procedure, who knows how to navigate the university and all of those types of things. So we understood and we appreciated that. So when the determination was made by the provost office to designate several hundred thousand dollars for the project, the decision was made to go through the normal HR channels to identify, a nationwide search was done, to identify someone who had that particular skill set. So there's a very nice, I like to use the word creative tension. There's a very good give and take between what NUBA wants to impose on the university and how the university digests that and then implements it in a way that is consistent with what it views as important. Did I get to everything you want? So we definitely had input into the selection process, which is also important to point out.
Well, I'm curious, did you present the university with a proposal?
Yes.
That you need to hire? Okay.
Yeah, the remnants of the proposal were available as early as 2012. I said, Lauren had been doing this for a long time. You know, I like to call her Joan the Baptist in these things in terms of the university's archive. And, you know, what I brought to the table was the ability to get it across the finish line and to implement that proposal. You know, we had a lot of great individuals with the correct background and experience in library studies and a history of being an archivist, and that's how that worked out.
Yeah, I think one of the things we're most proud of is the fact that we somehow got Northwestern to hire a black archivist. I mean, the implications for the future of this, if every predominantly white institution hired a black archivist to archive their black history, is amazing. You know, it would be thousands of black archivists out here. You know, we hope that happens. We hope that happens because we asked right away for interns or our work-study students to be trained with that black archivist to learn and understand why history is important and why archiving is important. You know, we don't know if that's going to happen. We certainly want it to be the leader in making something like that happen. We're very familiar. We're from Chicago, so we're very familiar with Juliana Richardson and her goals and implementation, her thoughts about, you know, some Ivy League schools and other predominantly white institutions to archive their black history. But we had been working on this before that. We know that we would love to have partnered with her to do this, but we knew that this is something that we could have Northwestern do and fund by themselves and appreciate and really move it forward. We are concerned, of course. Charlotte's position is a 3-year position, and we're not a big fan of these. I think I see this a lot in archives, right? People just have a 3-year position. Women are only important for the next 3 years. Black people are only important for the next 3 years. We think that's absurd. If that's so absurd, then the archive should be gone totally in the next 3 years. This is important. It's important work. It should continue to expand. And again, this is something in which if somehow Northwestern decides in 3 years that this is not important, then it will always be important to Northwestern Black Alumni Association. And we will move it forward with or without Northwestern. We'd like to do it with. We'd like to do it in partnership with, however that happens. But, you know, it certainly wasn't an easy feat. But Jeff made it a lot more, you know, no one likes arguing with Jeff. And so somehow the provost and the assistant provost and Kevin were in a meeting, and they're like, okay, let's hire this person, you know, right away. But, you know, we recognize it's a finite position. And we will continue to push to move it forward. We have programming in place that suggests that we'll be collecting until 2021 and 2022. And so someone needs to be there to do that, and Kevin can't do it all.
I wanted Lauren to get that out I actually didn't tell her, but I did get an email about a week ago that the university has decided to make the position permanent. So there you go. Yeah. Because otherwise, all the things that I've sat up here and gone out on a limb and said wouldn't be true, right? You know, temporary commitment is not a commitment, and we think the merits of what this represents are too important to simply go about it that way. I mean, you just look at the students. Imagine, if you will, in a 4 or 5 year period, you've gone from students really feeling isolated on a college campus because there's not a lot of folks that look like them and no one knows their story, to now being able to reference their place in history and to go look at a film that actually tells about how they were lucky enough to get there for the most part. It has really increased satisfaction. And by the way, another statistic, we like talking facts instead of appealing to emotionality. One of the things that we used as a data point was that black students were consistently, for as long as it had been measured at Northwestern, were reporting the lowest level of student satisfaction amongst all demographic groups being measured. And part of what NUBA has done in our interacting with students and in creating this legacy project, we've already begun to see the benefits in student levels of satisfaction, because they're simply, or until very recently with all the black administrators popping up on campus, there really hadn't been any individuals that were there to provide the type of support to them that they felt they needed, which is why the relationship between the alumni and the student really was demonstrated to be so important. And we also believe that the strength of the alumni precipitated the university to say that we don't necessarily need or want the Alumni Association to be the operational arm of the university, so we need to hire more people internally to do this work. That was the correct decision to come to, and that allows us to provide input and counsel and oversight, because there's a lot of stuff that needed to be done and still needs to be done, and having people who have full-time jobs to do that is a very good thing. No other questions? Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, so back when I was an undergrad, my school's Black Student Association attempted to create a compilation of our own institution's history as far as black students and administrators and so forth go. Unfortunately, that project was met with a lot of backlash in terms of a lot of the white students claiming that, oh, well, we're all this one institution. You don't need to make your specific history in this institution its own separate thing. It's kind of the same backlash I think Black History Month gets a lot, because people say, well, black history is American history, so it should always just be, you know, American history here or whatever. And I was just wondering if you all in the development of the archive met this kind of backlash, and how specifically from your community, from Northwestern students or administrators, specifically from the white community there, and how you handled that going forward to ensure that you were able to create this really important space for some of your Northwestern students.
When you're used to privilege, the approach to equality feels like oppression, right? So I just can't, I'm not constituted that way. I can't imagine asking for permission to tell my story or to own my story. I would actually love to have that conversation with anyone that had the cojones to want to discuss it with me, because, you know, again, I'm not going to have an emotional conversation about it. I love the opportunity to share, to educate, to illuminate. And you know, again, we have been very consistent in this. We all love Northwestern. We are unapologetic for that, because it's kind of silly. You know, I spent years being disgruntled and away from the university, but hell, how many $2 billion a year entities am I going to be a part of? So I said, I think I need to reimmerse myself and try to make this situation a little bit better. So the question, that's a false supposition there. It has nothing to do. And I've said in my comments, and we have consistently said, that we were very careful to always put what we were trying to do with the archive in the context of building a better Northwestern. You know, no apologies needed for me wanting to claim my own history. You know, again, I've read the quote. So the shorter answer to your question would have been, like Lauren said, nobody really wanted to have that conversation, because we were going to do it anyway.
And this is a thing that I think is critical when you think about Northwestern history. Harold Washington was the first black mayor of Chicago, a Northwestern Law School graduate, and Northwestern University does not have his archive. There's a gentleman named Harry Lennox, who's a very prominent actor now, and he's from the south side of Chicago, attended Chicago Public Schools, attended Northwestern University, huge at the Goodman Theater, all the theater groups in the Chicago area. And Harry Lennox very recently donated his archive to Boston University. Because 20 years ago, when he was doing the story of Malcolm X and Dr. King, they asked him. Northwestern never asked. Northwestern didn't care. We're losing. So now Chicago loses out completely on that. Because if someone who wants to be an actor, someone who is from Chicago Public Schools, who knows who Harry Lennox is, if they want to research Harry Lennox, they have to go to Boston. So every single repository in Chicago should be upset with themselves, number one. And I'm certainly upset with Northwestern University for letting a gentleman like Harry donate his archives elsewhere. By the time we got to him, it was too late. He's a part of this book here. He tells his story, which is a very rich story about Chicago and Northwestern. But unfortunately, if we don't attack these phenomenal alums now, then the scholarship that should have been done already, every institution has great alums, the scholarship that could be written and produced about these people they're not going to happen. And so we're going to make sure that we do our best to make sure that Northwestern alums, Leon Forrest, if you all know who Leon Forrest is, a phenomenal writer and poet who taught at Northwestern for 25 years, we don't have all of his archives. And again, he was there for 25 years. Someone should have asked him for all of his archives right away. So there's just a lot of people we're missing. So, that's not the case for a lot of white alums. They know to give their papers there. They're happy to do it. They've been asked. And that just didn't take place with us. So I think they understood what hasn't happened, what had not happened. Even Kevin understood that and was very happy to support this, once he recognized it was going to happen. So he was happy to support it at that point and knows the power of what this archive can be.
And the good news is that, once again, this is something that NUBA is able to do in a way that the university may not be able to do as well. We are systematically going down our alumni roster and identifying individuals to make sure that those types of mistakes and oversights don't occur again into the future. And, of course, through other activities of the Alumni Association, we are now engaging our community in ways that had never before been done. So this is such a galvanizing effort. It's built community both for the university as a whole, but certainly inside of the black alumni community as well. It's really been a very good thing, and I doubt if you talk to anyone who was a part of the university that they would do anything other than say, oops, I should have had a V8. Because it's worked out well. Other questions? We have a few minutes left. Yes.
I think it's a win-win for for the institution and for the alums and those people associated and friends in the community around it. I think that what we have to do, we're here because we want to make sure that archivists know that you all can start to have those conversations. It doesn't have to be driven by alums, but that when in doing that, you're putting together those alums. Those alums are probably going to become more re-engaged. They'll donate more money. And you've brought that to the table. You all have done that as archivists to your institution. You become more valuable across the board. So, you know, there's so many positives to what has occurred here. Control is an issue. The point of view is an issue. How these archives are going to be used is an issue. How we're presenting these archives in the future continue to be issues. I think all that can be worked out. I was very pleased that the archivists of color brought archivists to the Howard University archive yesterday. What a powerful, powerful repository it is for someone who is of African descent. You know, here's a HBCU, which their archive is all about black people. So you walk in and there are phenomenal scholars on the wall, you know, Kwame Nkrumah's archives, you know, Barack Obama's father's book is in there and his research. It's unbelievable. And we think we can have the exact same type of experience if we were to create events and exhibitions and things like that at Northwestern. It could be just as powerful. It's not a black institution, but we can make the people of color there very proud about what Northwestern has brought to the lives of not just its own community, but to the world, because these scholars have contributed greatly to all of mankind. If I told you some of the great scholars who were there, and your institutions have those scholars as well, and all of those people need to be illuminated.
I just want to thank SAA for giving us the platform to have this conversation. We believe it's important, and we hope you found it helpful. And to those of you that are considering, you mentioned that Mississippi State doing the same type of thing, that the more you bring to the table, the more organized it is, the more alumni you have on board ready to launch it. That's the type of thing that we saw really worked well, because if you left it to them to figure it out, well, that's been part of the problem historically, which is why it doesn't already exist. So I think we are at the hour, but we will stay here for as long as you want to chat, take a look at the book, or share experiences, or get any other comments about what it is we've done. So thank you all very much. Hope you enjoyed it.